Hey, it's the Shilling Show. We ask you to make an appointment with this program weekdays from noon to 2. And don't forget to visit us on Facebook, where we do lots of interesting things. Like today, Facebook friends, not only did I give out the show information, who's going to be on the show, the breaking news that we have Dave Bratt coming up next hour, but also a chance for Facebook friends who are so inclined to be part of a very small focus group looking at a new T-shirt and bumper sticker conservative design that I brainstormed over the weekend and have almost got it ready to go, asking people, hey, what do you think of this? What does it mean to you? Just trying to see if people get what I'm saying. So we have certain things like that that are there for our Facebook friends to take advantage of. And you could be a friend on Facebook. Just go to shillingshow.com. There's a little F up at the top of the page in a blue circle. If you click on that, it'll take you right where you need to go. Pleased to welcome to the Shilling Show David Morata, who joins us each and every month here on the program. Always fascinating conversations, and we're very lucky to have him. He's the president of Morata Wealth Management, online at moratamoney.com. Today, talking about the warnings to beware of government regulation, often intended to quell competition, which I don't think a lot of people see. David, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to talk about the growth of regulation and licensing. I watched this video, and we could talk about this in a minute, why Chuck can't get his business off the ground from the Institute for Justice, which is a great organization. But they said in this video that I guess it was about 100 years ago or a little less, that it was 1 in 20 businesses that were subject to regulation. Today, it's 1 in 3. I might have gotten that wrong, but I think that was the gist of what I saw.
Yeah, I think it was actually 1 in 3 people needed some certification just in order to do their job and work.
Okay, compared to 1 in 20.
Yeah, compared to 1 in 20. So it's absolutely amazing the number of things that you have to go through and to be certified. Even in our financial world, it's incredible. Just in the time that I've been a financial advisor, it seems to me the regulations have continued to be heaped on more and more. Post Bernie Madoff, that was the standard of choices. We just need more and more regulation and more certification. And the crooks aren't deterred by this at all. There's just as many Ponzi schemes in the news breaking in various parts of the country as there were before Bernie Madoff, and it doesn't seem to have changed that at all.
But, you know, as soon as something happens, let's just say somebody got sick or we had this, some disaster that happened or some problem with a car or some problem with the financial industry, the immediate call is, and I heard Mark Warner doing this when there was a problem with the train tracks when it rained too much down in Lynchburg, we got to have more regulation. We got to have more regulation. Trust me, I'm from the government. I'm here to help you. And whatever I say is going to make you safer. So how do we argue back to that rationally for people that are acting emotionally in the aftermath of something very tragic?
You know, it's interesting. I was just working on a blog post of John Bogle about investing, and this was an article, an interview he gave right after January, and January was a down month. And John Bogle's comment was, you know, the markets have gone down. It was really, we took a beating in January. And everyone wants to say, you know, don't just stand there, do something. But John Bogle said the best thing to do in investing is to say, don't just do something, stand there. Mm. In other words, the best thing in investing is quite often to do nothing. Yes, something unfortunate happened, but that doesn't necessarily mean you need to change what is working well and encouraging business. And I think that's the strategy that we have to have. If your first thought is there ought to be a law, your first thought is wrong. You need to stop that and break that, because every law and every regulation will be twisted by the incentives of money. And I think that's the strongest thing. And if you think business is bad, you should think regulation is bad, because most regulation is one business twisting regulation to promote itself and discourage its competition. And that's true. And it, you know, just take something as simple as the labeling of food as organic.
Mm-hmm.
So we have legislation to label. You can label food organic if it only has the following things, and then every single food industry tries to lobby to get the things that they put in their food or that they use in their process into the legislation. And they try to exclude everything that the competition to them puts in their food and has. So the problem with that is it's the force of government regulating the definition of a word, rather than having private associations that are going to be stricter and will say, well, our certification is the strictest certification, and so that, but it will be a private certification. So we will be the top rated of what it means to be organic. And then there can be a lesser company that will do something less. But most of regulation actually is in defining terms, and those are the most dangerous because the definition of terms is important.
I was talking about this in the past couple of days, and I've forgotten the guest or the exact context, but we were talking about, you know, having all of these regulations, and instead of having them through the government, why don't we have private? In fact, I remember now, it wasn't on the air, it was at a private event, and I was talking to somebody who represented the appliance manufacturers industry. We were talking about Energy Star, and the EPA is involved in Energy Star, and he said, you know, there's some good and some bad in that, but it's starting to tip. You know, mm-hmm. And he was looking at it from his, you know, saying, hey, this might benefit us. So even though the EPA is in, it's good. And I didn't agree with that. But basically, I said, why don't we have, you know, some other third party come out and say, hey, I'm going to offer my own certification. It won't be through the EPA, but we're going to establish a nonprofit or some sort of organization that says, here are the energy standards. And that way you don't have to play ball. We'll have something that competes with EPA Energy Star. And the more I think about it, the more that seems to make sense to me.
It does make sense. And then an organization that puts out those ratings, like Underwriters Laboratory,
yes,
has an incentive to make sure that those standards are high enough to gain consumer confidence. But the minute you get the government behind it and you get the government saying this is the way it's going to be by the rule of law, mm-hmm. then larger organizations can actually hurt smaller organizations. So to take, for example, just in our field, we're regulated by the SEC. And broker-dealers are also regulated by the SEC, so financial advisors and broker-dealers. And there are some financial advisors that are duly registered both with as a financial advisor and a broker-dealer. And the biggest part of the financial services world is under FINRA, and FINRA is the broker-dealer organization, and then they have their own set of rules. And so the proposals now are to take financial advisors and either put them under the rule of FINRA, which is like taking fee-only financial advisors and putting them under the rule of commission-based agents. It would just be terrible for us, and yet this is the idea to get more regulation. So it's a barrier to fee-only financial planners, and yet it's helpful for FINRA because now they get to regulate their primary competition. And so all these rules that they put in place about whether it's a fiduciary standard or whether it's a rules-based standard has the same problems to it. If you have these rules and they're not by a private organization, then suddenly they have the rule of law and everyone has to do the things one way rather than being able to do them two ways.
And I think the other thing that's hidden in this, David Morata, is that all of these things cost. So there are built-in costs to every one of these regulations. And if there were some way to break it down, I think it would be interesting for people to have a bill whenever they consume a service and say, here is the cost of regulation. This is what you're paying.
It would be good. I think in the medical industry, it would be 50% of your bill would be just because of the insurance organization, Medicare, Medicaid, and things like that, that by the rule of law, they have to do things a certain way. I've heard it said that in the medical world, if they didn't have all of that compliance issues, they'd be able to charge about half what they charge now if everybody paid in cash.
Unbelievable. We're going to continue this conversation on beware of government regulation and the intent to quell competition. 977-1070, the phone number. Maybe you work as an independent contractor and you have to get licensed or have to deal with licensing issues. We'd love to hear your story and what you think of it. Or maybe you think it's all a good idea. Stay with us. 977-1070, Shilling Show continues with David Morata.
I remember when I was a lad, times were hard and things were
coming up at 1:35 on the Shilling Show. It is Dave Brat, GOP nominee in the 7th District, the guy who has made national news now for weeks, and will be here with us exclusively on the Shilling Show coming up at about 1:35 today. Right now, we continue with David Morata, Morata Wealth Management, online at moradaonmoney.com, and we're talking about government regulation and licensing. And so I had mentioned this video earlier about why Chuck can't get his business off the ground. I'm going to ask Ellie to just Google that and put it up on show notes. It's from the Institute for Justice, Why Chuck Can't Get His Business Off the Ground. And so if people want to see that, they can go watch it. It's just a few minutes, but it's very profound. Tell us why that's an important video and what people are going to learn from seeing that.
Yeah, it goes through some of the more absurd things that you need to go through in order to start various businesses and the things you're allowed and are not allowed to do. And we're becoming more like Greece. I read a story of the Grecian economy that said someone was trying to run a bookstore in Greece, but they were not allowed to sell books after 5 o'clock, and they were not allowed to serve coffee because there was a coffee place across the street. So they had to run across the street to get their customers coffee for their coffee shop, and then after hours they couldn't sell books after five. And those are the kinds of rules that we're beginning to develop. And I think this one just goes to show that in the United States we have just as absurd rules, if not even more absurd rules, about what you can and can't do in the economy and what you can and can't do in your own home. And running a business out of your own home requires a tremendous amount of licensing. And it used to be everyone ran their businesses out of their home. So So it's sort of ridiculous along those lines. And I understand all the liberal concerns in terms of, you know, well, we can't allow this and we can't allow that and we can't allow this. But that's the kind of thing that really squelches entrepreneurship and really makes it much more difficult for anyone. My wish would be that everyone was their own business and they had to run their own employment as a business. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think libertarians have more contact with government. I think having more contact with government makes you more libertarian. You just realize that all of this is absurd, and the more businesses you run and the more things you try to do, the more you realize that government is not your friend. They're actually your adversary. And it develops this very, very hostile approach from the government in everything they do. I've never seen good customer service from government agencies. Occasionally, you'll get a person who's good, but more often than not, you'll get a person who just tells you, I'm sorry, we don't do customer service, if you can have someone who actually answers the phone at all.
You know, there's a lot of indifference there because there is no accountability. And so people get into these jobs and they're in there for as long as they want to be. They're very well compensated. They have great benefits. And what do they care? And that's the attitude. You know, when there's no competition for your job, it does breed contempt.
Right. It's force of law that you have to work with them. There's no other choice of actually going through the corporation commissions and the regulatory bodies of the world. Yeah, and I think when people say, oh, there ought to be a law, you know, we're called upon in the Bible to be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. Mm-hmm. And we really do need to be wise about the incentives that are in place for corporations and government to use this to punish some and reward others. So I'm afraid that most people are just as naive as liberals and as compromised as lobbyists. They just don't realize that all of this is being used against the consumer and for businesses to help some and discourage others. And so, you know, my favorite video among that lot was the natural hair braiding, where you were, you know, this is just the natural process of braiding hair, and you want to open a shop to do that, and you have to have a cosmetology license which doesn't teach natural hair braiding and has all this stuff about chemicals and dyes and perms and things like that you're never going to do. And yet the law is if you touch hair, you have to have a cosmetology license, and that's just not appropriate. It's just not helpful. It's not what we need to do to encourage entrepreneurship.
And by the way, getting a cosmetology license, I don't know what the number of hours is, but I remember when I was a kid back in California, I used to go get my haircut at PCC at Pasadena City College. They had a cosmetology department, and they give you a haircut for like $3 or something. I don't remember what it was, $5. But you were in there with the people who were training. But this was incredibly intense training. They were in there for a long, long time, and then they have to take this big test. And all of it seemed pretty ridiculous to me. If I want to go get a haircut somewhere, what's the cost of the cosmetology license, going back to our earlier statements, in the cost of my haircut? A tremendous amount.
Right. And a lot of people who are very good at cutting hair then go get a cosmetology license so they can open their own shop. It's very few people who say, I'm terrible at cutting hair, so I better go get certified for it in order so I can become good and then open my own shop. I mean, even in the certifications that I have in the financial services world, you get all kinds of initials after your name. You know, and when I look at what I learned from my certified financial planner, my CFP, I learned more from my father and mentoring under him and being able to do that. And then I learned more from being a voracious reader and being good at judging what I read. Yes, there are things I learned from my CFP. Yes, I'm glad I have that information. But I think I would have been just as good a financial advisor if I'd spent all the time that it took to go through the CFP being a voracious reader and continuing to learn on my own.
I had the exact same experience years ago, and we'll get to the phones in just a second, 977-1070, when I was getting my real estate license. And we went through this whole process. I got my real estate license. This was in California. And then this guy comes through town who says, okay, you've got your license, but none of that is practical information. His name was Terry Floatin, and he had a company in Southern California. And so his business was, I'm going to take you for 3 days and give you a real seminar on what the whole thing is that you need to know regarding the contract and the sort of law that you need to be aware of. Because all the other stuff you learned, it's totally impractical to holding your real estate license. And he was right. I knew nothing about the real estate business when I got my licensing. But after I took this course, I felt very well equipped. And I thought, that's what they ought to be teaching people, not that. Not meets and bounds.
Yeah, it's the same thing in the financial planning world. NAPFA, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, has a whole track at their conferences for people who are just starting out. And it's basically a week-long training of everything you need to know to actually run a financial planning firm that, by the way, you didn't learn when you got your CFP, because that's not the stuff that they actually teach.
Let's go to the phones. David Murata is our guest. There's a line open for you right now at 977-1070. That's 434-977-1070. And we welcome George to the Shilling Show. Hello, George.
Good afternoon. Rob, my favorite small little long-haired conservative talk show host, is still putting up this futile resistance. I wanted to call to give you a couple of tips to nudge you further along so that you will finally give up your puny little insignificant resistance and join my quest for leftist fascist world domination. Are you ready?
Is this George Soros?
This is George Soros. Yes, yeah. Of course. I always turn into the Shilling Show so that I can provide you puny little intellect with some insight so that you still give up this resistance.
Well, David Murata's all ears, George.
Absolutely. So I wanted to give you just some proof points so that you can consider. And one is actually provided by your guest. Number one, he keeps referring to people like me as liberals. The whole point of liberalism is to remove restrictions, to let the individual be who he or she wants to be, to create enterprise. What we are is leftist fascists. We are the ones who are dictating who can create businesses and how and who you have to pay off, and then you have to pay off the payoff. The second thing is that Gallup did a survey several years ago asking young people, ages, I think it was 7 to 22, asking them, who makes the world a better place for young people? Is it corporations or is it government? And by like 25 to 1, they said, government. Corporations are evil, you see. So if you two would just please give up your puny little insignificant resistance and join me, I will make you wealthy and powerful, and you won't have to worry about, oh, will I create a business in my home? Oh, who do I have to pay up? You will join me.
And you didn't build that after all, right?
Absolutely. Well, I built Obama. I built this entire misadministration, and that was a lot of effort, believe me.
Hey, George, may the force of government be with you. David, a quick comment before we go to the break.
Yeah, I mean, George is correct. Young people think that the government is much better than corporations. But if you look at it, they actually spend more of their discretionary dollars buying technology from the corporations than they do on the government. I think the reason why most older people end up being more and more conservative is we realize that more and more of our money is going to the government, and we don't have a choice as to whether or not it does.
George, thank you so much for the call, and I know there are many people impressed that George Soros spends his time listening to The Shilling Show. All right, it is 1244-977-1070 is the phone number. David Murata, our guest. We're talking about government regulation and licensing. If you have had experience with that, crazy stories, you can even use a pseudonym when you go on the air. You know, David, it's unfortunate, but here a lot of people are very scared of the government, of speaking out against the government because they have to do business with them.
Yeah, you either have to be all out there like you and I are, mm-hmm. or you need to be very careful in what you say. And most people are not. Most people are very careful in what they say. They choose their words carefully. And then if something that they have said blows up, then they apologize profusely for it and try to make amends and kowtow. It's really the way North Korea works, is if you're ever caught saying something terrible, you have to prostrate yourself before the government and do homage. I just think there's enough people so that even if all the liberals in Charlottesville decided never to do business with me again, there would still be enough people that I could live my life free and unencumbered by the checking of everything that I believe at the door. So I guess that's the difficulty with government. But it is a chilling thought knowing that every email is being recorded and every mm-hmm. phone call could be recorded and everything. And I figure if they've got all that, I might as well say it on the radio. I just don't think government's a great idea, and I think they do more harm than good.
877-1070, the phone number of the Shilling Show. Back with our final segment, David Murata and you, right after this. Delegate Bob Marshall coming up at 1:15. What's his response to Tricky Terry and Herring the Red? We'll find out when Bob joins us right now. Our final segment with David Murata, 977-1070 is the phone number. Government regulation, government licensing. There were some pretty interesting stories that you brought to my attention. We talked about the foolishness of this whole natural hair braiding. But there was something else that I had never heard of before, and it is taxicab medallions.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Those are the classic case of economics. They're actually in economic textbooks. They'll teach them. So some cities require a taxicab medallion in order to drive a taxicab, and they only issue a certain number of taxicab medallions. And the list of things you need to go through before you're even allowed to have a taxicab medallion are huge. And taxicab medallions are worth, they're worth $1 million in New York. So one taxicab medallion, meaning one medallion to drive a cab, is worth $1 million. And you have to buy it from someone else in order to get it because they're regulating how many there are. In Boston, they're worth $700,000. In Philadelphia, they're worth $400,000. In Miami, they're worth $300,000. But they're incredibly, incredibly prized possession. The total price of all the taxicab medallions in Chicago are $2.4 billion.
Wow.
So the problem now is that the medallion cartel, if you will, there's cracks in it now. Because the medallion is for having a taxicab with the little taxicab symbol up on the top.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the internet, some services are coming around to say, you get online and you say, I need to get from here to there. And there's a whole set of people that they have who can either accept it or turn it down. And they're not taxicabs because they're not advertising.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving them a private ride. And so they're beginning to have competition with the taxicabs through the internet technology, if you will, such that you don't have all these cabs driving around. You just have someone sitting at home, and when you need to go somewhere, they go pick you up, and they drop you off somewhere, and they get the fare. So there's beginning to get cracks in that taxicab medallion. But the most interesting thing is you think about, well, I don't want all these taxicabs driving around on the street, so we need to regulate them and limit the number of taxicabs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure, but then this other service doesn't limit them at all. And who's it really benefiting? It's benefiting the medallion owners. And no medallion owner drives a taxicab.
Mm.
Because if you have $1 million taxicab medallion, mm-hmm. what do? You loan that taxicab medallion out to people and the car that it's stuck on, and they're the ones who are going to drive the cab for you and make the money for you because you've got $1 million worth of an asset there, and so you're automatically rich. You're not poor. And all the poor people who want to drive taxicabs can't do it. So, I mean, that's the kind of barrier to entry is what's wrong with somebody driving a taxi cab and being able to do that? Why should we impede them from doing that? Why shouldn't we have more taxi cabs? Sometimes trying to find a taxi cab is really difficult. And so why not have more people driving taxi cabs?
You know, I love these services, and one's called Uber and one's called Lyft, and yet they're being cracked down on by governments who are so fearful of these services all over, not only in this nation, but there was protests in London, I heard, and other places. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Steve. Steve, you're on with David Murata. Go right ahead.
All right, how you guys doing?
Doing great. What's on your mind?
Yeah, the whole licensing thing, I think, you know, in many cases, the American public would be happy to accept it if they thought they were getting a benefit from it. They were getting someone who's regulated in terms of making sure that they're knowledgeable, they're skilled, they have a background that's free from, you know, whether it's criminal infractions, whatever. But for the most part, they're used in this country not for that purpose, but as a restraint of trade. What you talk about with the taxi drivers, what you talk about with licensing for electricians, all of these things are designed to protect the people that are in those jobs now, not the people that want to get those jobs.
Let's get a comment.
That's just my thought.
Yeah, Steve, yes. Thank you. Let's get a comment.
Steve is exactly right. Most regulation and most of it is for restraint of trade. It's to impede people who might compete with the organizations that have enough political power to get those laws in place. Yeah, and we've got the same thing. You were talking about the taxi cabs. We have the same thing here in Charlottesville in terms of renting your home out.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to rent your home out, you're competing with the hotels. Believe me, we need more hotel space here
yeah.
for only a couple of years or a couple of weeks out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are willing to open their homes during graduation, I am just glad that they're able to do that. and renting your home out for 1 or 2 weeks a year seems to me like a great idea. And I don't think there should be any rules or regulations against it. You should be able to do that.
We used to have a phrase called caveat emptor, and that translates to buyer beware. In other words, you should do due diligence. You should try to figure out what you're doing before you consummate a transaction with somebody, and beware. And it's not that we are promoting recklessness, but it seems to me that we've taken away all personal responsibility for these things and entrusted it to government.
We have, and government does an incredibly poor job of it. Rather than protecting us from the financial sharks in the commission-based world, their regulations actually end up impeding fee-only financial planners who are smaller firms and can't handle all the regulation.
So what does a country without licensing look like? We've got about a minute left. Are there places in America that are really much more lax, and do we have a model?
There are industries where we're much more lax in terms of what regulations do we have on opening up a website.
Well, not yet.
Not yet. But every year in Congress, people propose legislation that would regulate what cookies an internet site can put on your browser. And I've read this legislation, and they are horrible. And if we ever have that, we will lose our edge as a technology innovator, because technology changes too quickly to be stuck under static government regulations. So I would say that the reason why America is so great at technology is because some Stanford student in his dorm room can start a website and grow it into one of the biggest and best services in the world. And that kind of entrepreneurship should be rewarded. And that's the kind of entrepreneurship that we would have in other industries if we had less regulation. We'd have people trying more models and trying different things and producing it much better.
It is exciting when entrepreneurship is unfettered and we see these wonderful things coming out. But I have a feeling that fewer and fewer people are willing to venture out. David Morata, thanks so much for joining us today. What a terrific topic.
Yeah, thank you so much. And everyone out there, remember, there should not be a law for it.
That's right. And I want to get into that at the top of the next hour, because I just saw an email dispatch from the Tim Kaine campaign on behalf of Mark Warner, which really goes to this exact topic. All right, so we'll get into that. Dave Bratt coming up in hour number two. Yes, that Dave Bratt, the one who was excoriated by the Daily Newspaper for not talking to the press. Well, he will actually be talking to us today. And I know the Daily Newspaper will be monitoring and trying to get information from this interview. Please credit the Shilling Show, Daily Newspaper. All right, we'll be back. Open phones 977-1070 when the Shilling Show returns. You can get in line right now.
Came and made my dreams, man, dreams.